It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 187 of Radio TCX.
Your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Carson Ray.
Hey everyone, it's a great day to talk about X-Wing.
And John McDermott.
Hello.
And this is a big episode for us. We just wrapped up a week-long event, basically, of X-Wing, the 2019 X-Wing World Championships. We have a new X-Wing World Champion. We had played a ton of games over that course of the week, both in the main events, the qualifiers, and the side events. So a really solid block of just back-to-back X-Wing games.
Yeah, and this was kind of a weird one for us because usually, you know, one of us feels bad when someone does better than the other, but we didn't really have that issue this week. We just all finished within the same score.
Yeah, that was a pretty solid and classic Radio TCX move at a world championship. Finish with a winning record and then just never make the cut. So we'll cover that today. We're going to talk a little bit about the final matchup and the two finalists for the world championships. And then we're going to look a little bit at our faction and archetype breakdown for the top 32 there, so we can see kind of the overall state of the game.
All right, let's get to it. They've already waited a week. Can't let them wait any longer.
All right, so I do want to start off with an apology about not posting an episode last week. We actually did record a first iteration of episode 187 right before the event there. I just did not have enough time in all the world's prep to get that edited and posted. So likely what's going to happen is you're going to see, for all our Patreon subscribers, there will be a lost episode appearing at some point in the future. And it'll be fun because it was a much, much lower key episode than our normal fare.
Yeah, not a lot of actual content provided in that episode, just a lot of us talking about random stuff.
Right, and it's all kind of old news.
See, I think there was a lot of content, just not a lot of X-Wing content.
Yeah, just us announcing that we're a KeyForge podcast now.
Everyone's into KeyForge now. Maybe that can be another lost episode or just more content for Patreon. But let's talk a little bit about our experience at Worlds here before we dive into the nitty-gritty of all the technical details. In, you know, what is now Radio TCX tradition, when we go to Worlds, we always end with a winning record and then just don't make the cut. So all three members of Radio TCX ended with a 4-3 record, which is, you know, a solid performance, I think.
I like how we're ignoring the years at Worlds where I did not have winning records, so that's cool. But yeah, this year, all three of us just, you know, one win away from making the cut, all with that 4-3 record.
And to be fair, Carson, I didn't really consider you a member of the podcast until you had a winning record at Worlds, so you were more just kind of a continual guest host, in my mind. No, you earned your spot now. You're totally fine. And you're the North American champion, so, you know, that means something. Okay, so there's like three questions I thought we should talk about from our personal experiences here. Just to keep this brief, we don't like to do a lot of battle reports on Radio TCX, so don't expect many of those. But I want to ask each of you guys just like your overall Worlds experience impression, just looking at, you know, beyond the games you played, what did you think of the whole event? So, John, let's start with you.
Sure. So, had a lot of fun. I was there helping out on Thursday, kind of hanging out over by the side of fence, so that was cool. To kind of just interact with people pretty much all day. As an introvert, like, it's exhausting for me, but I get more energy from doing X-Wing-related interactions than any other, I think. So that was awesome.
I feel you there, yeah.
Yeah. The qualifying day, played on Friday, started strong, went 3-0, and then, just kind of had a downward spiral from there. Went 3-3, managed to win the last one, but overall, very positive, had a lot of fun. I think I had a very interesting and somewhat difficult, I think, first game with just some interactions between, like, the other player and myself that just kind of set the tone for me, I think, for the rest of the day. So I was kind of, like, in my own head about a lot of things going into my games. But sure. Overall, loved it, had a lot of fun, and hopefully I'm fortunate enough to go next year.
So, Carson, how about you? You also ended with the 4-3 record, as we've said, like, three times already in this show. What was your overall Worlds experience like?
Oh, I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, just great to see everybody, see all the old returning faces, meet a bunch of new people. I think this felt like the most international Worlds has ever been. So I think that seems like the invite system is working well, you know, helping out all those international players, you know, be able to make that commitment.
Absolutely.
Come out.
Seemed like there were much bigger groups coming from other countries.
And I think that makes it feel, you know, a lot more like a world championship, which is what we want.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, my list was fun, and I think it, you know, was strong enough. You know, just lost out on a few close games that could have gone either way. And that's what happens when you play against, you know, just a bunch of really tough opponents, which is also what you want. You know, you want those challenging games.
Yeah, and for me, I really love this Worlds. Honestly, this is, you know, I've been to, I don't know, at least 5 World Championships at this point, and this is easily my favorite. I think the venue shift was a really good call. And, you know, the invite system, I think, did make more people inclined to, you know, travel from other countries because they could plan in advance. And it was just a, yeah, very international, truly Worlds-like experience. We got to hang out with people from a ton of different countries. I don't even want to list them all for fear of, you know, forgetting to list someone off, but it was an awesome event. I really loved how it was run. My experience was I had to play in the LCQ because I'm a scrub and I didn't have invites like Carson and John, but that actually went really well. Ended, I believe I was the number one 5-1 at the end of the LCQ, so that felt pretty good, even though, you know, I did a little worse than that the next day. But yeah, just on the cusp of getting into that 5-2 rank to get to the last day. My day started with a really tough match against Andrew Bunn, where he just crushed me on my day 1A actual main event qualifier. Then I won the next 4, so I was just one win away. Then I had a really great game, but a pretty harsh loss over on the Gold Squadron live stream, and then followed that up by playing another person running the exact same list I lost to in the first round. So a little rough there at the end. Just needed to win 1 out of 2 and couldn't quite pull it through, but I was pretty confident in the way I performed and pretty happy with my list choice. I mean, speaking of list choices too, John, did you feel like there's anything you would have changed if you would, you know, if you had the knowledge you have now, is there anything you would have done differently with your list or brought a different list entirely?
No, I don't think so. I mean, kind of going into Worlds, I felt really good about what I was flying. It was very similar to what I flew in Denver, to some success. So what I don't know. It? I felt like I had to, I flew Soontir, Vader, and Duchess this week at Worlds, or this past week at Worlds. So, I felt like I had the tools I needed, and everything in the list felt good and familiar to me. So I don't think I would have changed anything.
Carson, how about you? What'd you fly?
Oh, yeah, I guess we didn't say the list. I flew Nia Nub, Lula Lampar, Jess Pava, and Rose.
In the transport pod, right?
Right.
Instead of Finn. And do you feel like that was a strong list choice for the event?
Yeah, I had a lot of tools to deal with, you know, all the various opponents you're going to face.
What about you, Tim? What did you fly?
So I decided that I don't think upgrade cards are necessary to play X-Wing. So I chose a first order list that included a no upgrades Kylo Ren, a no upgrades Scorch in the TIE FO, a no upgrades Epsilon Squadron pilot, that's the Initiative 1 TIE FO, and then 2 Zeta Squadron survivors, that's the Initiative 2 TIE SF. So no upgrade cards in there, pretty limited abilities, seldom used Kylo's I'll Show You the Dark Side ability, but the list actually performed really well. It did a fantastic job at holding on to MOV during the LCQ, so not only did I have that strong winning record, I had some really strong MOV. Yeah, and, you know, I worry about if I made the right choice having seen, you know, what happened to me at the event. I did not have a great matchup against regen lists, which are 2 of my losses on my actual day 1A qualifier. And I also didn't have a great matchup against Sinker Swarms, which is something I really should have been prepared for. And that was my other loss in day 1A. So they were actually still, 2 of those were still close games, the Sinker Swarm and the second regen list. But yeah, I think if I would have teched a little bit more, I probably should have been more prepared to play against regen and Sinker Swarms. But you know what? I think the list worked pretty well overall. It surprised a lot of people just to see it out there and see no upgrade cards on it. And Kylo Ren is just an absolute monster. I mean, passive mods are amazing.
Sure are. Force is pretty good.
All right, so my last question for you guys is, if you could change one thing about the next World Championship, what would it be?
overall, I thought the event was great. The prizes were super cool. The side events were fun. There was a lot of positive reception to the Aces High format that they did on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, that was super fun.
Sounds like a lot of people want to take that home and try it with their local stores. So the only thing I think I would change is maybe more diverse faction prizes. So, I mean, like, they had the alternate punch for the Red Squadron for Rebels, which was a super cool implementation thing. Maybe seeing that for different factions would be cool. So, like, if they're going to do different faction promos, then, you know, have alternate dial covers for some of those too.
Yeah, that actually, I mean, like, yeah, the only thing I'd really change about it is I just, like, want more content, you know? Like, side events were fun. I'd love to see more variety in side events, more opportunities to just play, you know, pods of Aces High rather than just the standard pods. The prize support was amazing. I just, really, what I wanted was more tickets because there was so much cool stuff to get. I couldn't get all of it. But, yeah, I'd love to, I agree with you, John. It would be awesome, like, to see alternate punch board for, like, each faction, because they had six of them anyway. So, like, you know, you could do one for each faction, have one of their pilots get highlighted and have some cool new punch.
All right. So, you know, we all had a great time at Worlds, but that's not what people want to hear about. They want to hear about the people who actually won. So, you know, got to stop talking about ourselves and talk about some winners here.
Well, yes. And I think we should start off with a huge congratulation to our new X-Wing World Champion, Oliver Pocknell. He took the final table there in a very, 1776 era match of an English Empire list versus an American Rebels list, which seemed very appropriate. And I think added to the atmosphere of it really being a world championship, right?
Yeah, I mean, shout out to Oliver Pocknell and Daniel Taylor for just providing us with an awesome final table. Super great game. And I think it was also just cool, you know, we had the stadium seating in the Roy Wilkins Auditorium.
Yeah.
So that was really fun to watch from there.
And actually, you know, sitting up there, you could surprisingly see a lot of what was going on in the game. So it wasn't a terrible vantage point. You still wanted to run the stream, though, in the background just to hear the details. Oliver's list, though, is, you know, pretty straightforward, but it's got a lot of tools just built into the ship. So you have Darth Vader with passive sensors and afterburners, along with a Whisper TIE Phantom with passive sensors and Fifth Brother, and then just a straight-up Grand Inquisitor in the TIE V1.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool triple ace list because you have quite a bit of diversity between all of your aces. You know, you have the Whisper Phantom, which has just been a kind of extended staple throughout all of second edition. You know, the Phantoms get to move in their own unique way, and passive sensors is a big boost for the Phantoms, being able to get the target lock, and then now also have a force mod for offense, incredibly powerful while still being able to hold up actions for defense as well. Really versatile ace there.
I was getting kind of reminded of first edition because, you know, the TIE Phantom doesn't have an inherent way to take target locks. Back in first edition, people would just run fire control system on it, so it would get target locks after it attacked. Passive sensors was kind of giving me a similar feel to that, where the ship can't normally get the target lock, but you set up passive sensors. You trigger that. When you engage, you get the lock, and then you still have a Fifth Brother force charge to modify your attack with. So get pretty much full modification on your attack.
Right, and then we have just the Grand Inquisitor with no upgrades, which is pretty fun. You know, just relying on those force mods, you know, plus just the pretty good action efficiency that the TIE V1 has. You know, being able to take that white evade plus, you know, two force is pretty strong. And the ability to, you know, take away the range bonus from attacks coming at you makes the Grand Inquisitor just a really resilient ace.
Yeah, I think one of the big lessons I learned is, you know, this World Championship just reemphasized how good passive modification is in X-Wing. Just any ship that has a force user or can take, you know, Fifth Brother, those kind of force crews and gunners, to get that passive modification. John, you had some experience with that too, right? Because your Duchess has Fifth Brother on it too.
Yeah, Fifth Brother is really nice. You know, if you have a really good attack and end up not needing it for offense, having that force charge for defense is just as good too. Especially with Whisper, you know, backed up by her evade from decloaking. And then if she performs an attack that hits, she gets that second evade too. So, like, you know, with that force mod and her ability to just get a bunch of evade tokens, like, her defense is pretty good. Fifth Brother is also just a really good value for the points. Like, it's like a 9-point gunner for a recurring modification. Like, that's pretty good.
It was funny too, because the Fifth Brother also lets you spend the charge to change it, change a focus result into a critical, which can often be relevant if you're, you know, flying against ships that have low shield counts or you strip their shields. I was flying a Duchess with Fifth Brother, similar to your list, John, during the 2020 qualifier, and I actually had to often use, against some Rebel lists, use the Force Charge just for a regular hit because they kept using Selfless to pass it away.
Those dang Rebels, man. Traitors. Thieves.
And then we see Darth Vader here with passive sensors and afterburners, which Darth Vader's been a staple ship, which I think is really interesting because he does have 3 agility dice and passive mods, does not have access to an evade token. So you're usually a little bit more wary about putting him into risky situations, except for when you have the opportunity to use afterburners, which is pretty clutch on Vader.
I really like his combination of afterburners and passive sensors too. You know, with afterburners working, even if you go through an obstacle, like he had the option to just go through, you know, gas clouds or rocks, whatever he was faced with. And then assuming he made it through, he could just do afterburners boost and then do all the Vader actions afterwards by spending those force charges, which is a super powerful ability. And with Vader at initiative 6, like definitely not something that should be underestimated.
Yeah, and passive sensors just provides kind of a nice insurance policy for Vader. You know, usually he's moving last at initiative 6, but when you're up against other initiative 6 aces, you know, with a bigger bid, you can just use the passive sensors when you activate, and then because you're moving first there, Vader's going to be activating first in the engagement phase, allowing you to trigger passive sensors, take a target lock, and then use his ability to, you know, barrel roll out of arc or into arc, maybe even spend another force for a focus token, you know, just get all the Vader's mods he needs.
And I think, you know, I mean, clearly he's the world champion, so it was a good call. But I think passive sensors is a really good call on Vader right now because it gives you the opportunity to afford cards like afterburners. I've seen a lot of people fly Darth Vader without afterburners where your only reposition is a barrel roll. And that can create some trouble for you where if people, you know, go all in on Vader with their ships, Vader might not be able to get out of trouble there just by virtue of only having the one reposition action. And normally, if you want to add afterburners, you can, but that just narrows up your bid so much that being able to trigger, you know, barrel rolls or getting the free boost after you maneuver allows you to kind of compensate, like you're saying, Carson, for the lack of a bid because Oliver's list here runs at 197 points, which is not something we'd see in a traditional Imperial Aces list.
Right, but that was still enough to outbid Daniel Taylor, the runner-up, who was flying a pretty sweet Rebel list. I got 5 ships, a pretty cool Rebel mid-range list here with Wedge Antilles with Crackshot and S-Foils, Braylon Stram with Crackshot, Jamming Beam, Jake Farrell with Crackshot, Lieutenant Blount with Crackshot, and then a Bandit Squadron pilot.
I'm assuming all 3 of us were pretty surprised to see Z95s make the top table, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised to see Lieutenant Blount. He's been a pretty strong piece for the Rebels.
I mean, I definitely wasn't expecting to see C95s, but it's really cool to see him make it all the way to the final table. Especially a generic.
Yeah, the Bandit Squadron pilot was a bit more of a surprise, I think. But it put in a lot of work.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen Wedge be a staple of Rebel lists here. Just that really powerful pilot ability to reduce agility when he shoots. That does a lot of work, especially against high agility ships where suddenly Wedge's 3 attack dice, you know, at range 2, if he gets 3 hits, that basically guarantees damage on any 3 agility ship. So, and we saw a really awesome play, you know, early on in the game when they were kind of setting up the first engagement. Kind of out of nowhere, Daniel went for a very aggressive forward maneuver with Wedge and then boosted with the S-foils closed. So he was reducing his attack die. But what that did was set him up a really good range 1 shot on Darth Vader. Which, you know, put a lot of the game in his favor pretty early on because he got so much damage to Ron Vader that Vader actually got destroyed. Sure, Wedge took a lot in return, but he still lived that round. So really powerful, really aggressive and risky maneuver by Daniel that I think mostly paid off, right?
I mean, definitely. I think, you know, Ollie's 2 biggest damage output ships in his list are Vader and Whisper. And to lose Vader so early, I think at face value puts Ollie at a big disadvantage for the rest of the game, considering that he hadn't traded anything yet. So, I mean, yeah, he put a lot of damage on Wedge, but Wedge was still on the table and is still a threat to Whisper and the Grand Inquisitor since they're only initiative fives. Yeah, when Ollie did that 1-4 with Vader and got shot by Wedge that turn, I was a little worried for him, but he managed to pull it out and made it work, so.
Daniel turned what would probably normally be a pretty favorable engagement for the Empire with their agility and mods into something that, you know, you don't expect to lose Vader at that moment. So I'm sure that put Oliver in an awkward position there. But he pulled it through, though, even with that Initiative 6 Rebel still up on the board moving after all his ships. He was able to disengage, push some damage through later, and then reclaim the game.
Right. I mean, when you have that extended time for the finals, that does give Oliver, you know, the time he needs for his aces to, you know, just slowly chip away at all the hit points in Daniel's list. And that's what happened, you know, took that early tough loss with losing Vader, but stuck with it and, you know, played the game he needed to play, you know, keep the rest of his ship safe and just slowly get in damage when he could.
And I think these two lists really represent some of the best that each of those factions are offering. Obviously, the Empire always really been good in the Aces front. So this is going to be, I think, a staple triple Aces list until we see our next points update. And I think, you know, Daniel showing us how effective Z95s could be in Rebel lists still, utilizing the already well-known power of Braylon Strom or Jake Farrell's free actions and repositions. This is going to also be a staple Rebel list that we should see for a little while. Now is the time, though, we have to look at our wagers. We took three guesses at what would be at the final table for three different questions, and I think we should now see which member of Radio TCX was the most right, the most accurate. All right, so the first question we asked was name a pilot that was going to appear at the final table at Worlds. John, do you remember what you said?
Yep, I said Soontir Fel.
And did we have Soontir Fel at the final table?
We did not.
All right, no points for John. Carson, what was your pick?
I had Fenn Rau, which did not make it to the final table, but I think had a lot more appearances in the top 32 than anybody else expected.
Yeah, so you're close, but that's still no point for you. My guess was a Trade Federation drone, which we were close. You know, there were some top 32. Decent top 32 representation from Separatist Swarms, but nothing that really got too close on that Initiative 1 drone front. So, all right, so no points for the first question. Second question, just name a ship type that will be at the final table. I'll just go ahead and say I got 0 points because I guessed the N1 Starfighter, so that didn't happen. Carson, what was your pick?
I had the T-65, so point to me there. Thanks, Daniel, for bringing Wedge.
Now, I will note that you did change your answer after we critiqued you about when you said Y-Wings initially. So I guess that's a half point in my book, but whatever. John, what was your guess?
I said the TIE Advanced V1, and we do have one here with Ollie's Grand Inquisitor.
All right, so there's a full point for you, John. And Carson, you have 0.9 of a point, so.
I'm not really understanding how this game's working, but okay.
I'm the sole judge, so I get to decide the point values.
Is that because you didn't get any points?
Finally, an upgrade. You know what, Carson? I'm taking away another 0.1. I'm taking another 1/10 of your point away. So you're at 0.8 of a point.
That was worth it.
Yep. All right, and then the final question was, name an upgrade card that will appear at the final table. I said Sense. That was not the case. But Carson, what did you say?
I think I had R2 Astromech.
You did, yes. And while there were Rebels here, there was no regen to be seen. That leaves us up to John. John, what was your upgrade pick?
I said Predator, and there was no Predator.
All right, so we were almost entirely wrong about all these. I'm just going to tally up the scores here real quick.
So how many for you, Tim?
So I came in at a whopping 0 from the three questions, so that puts me squarely in last place. And then I think the next score up is 0.8 of a point, so Carson, that puts you in last place. John, you win with one full point and one correct guess.
All right.
I'm willing to accept my humble winnings here, but I would like to take the opportunity to point out that I did predict that the Imperial faction would win, and they did. So I think that's worth like 5 points.
It was not one of the official questions, so we're just going to go ahead and move on. Sorry,
fine.
John.
Don't try to act like you earned that win. All right, so outside of the final table, we decided to look at the top 32. The top cut had about 90-some players. Anybody who went 5-2 made it to the final cut and then played a single elimination, with the top seeds getting a first-round bye.
After that cut, they played then top 64 with all those remaining players to single elimination down to the final. So we don't really want to go through all the lists in any one category here, so we're taking a look at our top 32, which we felt like would give us a good representation of what's strong in the game right now. And we're kind of taking a big picture approach. So we're looking generally at the archetypes that we're seeing and the faction representation.
Right. I think top 32 is a pretty good snapshot for, you know, what are the really successful lists. I mean, there's a lot of good lists, you know, all throughout the hundreds of players there. But whittle it through, you know, 7 rounds on your heat and then, you know, make it through some of those elimination rounds. I think really shows that all of these lists are really strong. And, of course, the players flying them are very skilled as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good snapshot, too, just because, you know, in order to get to top 32, even after going 5-2, which is strong, you still had to survive maybe 2 rounds of elimination to get there. So I feel like, yeah, these lists are really kind of the cream of the crop that we see for X-Wing right now. And the faction breakdown was interesting. So Scum, Republic, and Empire all had 7 players showing up in the top 32. The Separatists and the Rebel Alliance each had 4 players. There were 3 Resistance players and then a whopping 0 First Order players. So clearly I made the poor choice of faction at this event. I'm still proud of it, though.
Yeah, I actually was surprised that there wasn't as many First Order players. Like, I don't think it's a bad faction. But, you know, when you are competing in Extended, you know, especially when you look at Scum, Empire, and Rebels, they just have a whole slew of options. The First Order with their 4 ships, that's tough.
Yeah, still pretty restricted. I think when I played J1A, there were only a total of 9 First Order players, so we all just, by being there, got an auto top 16 in faction, which is pretty cool. I also got some dial covers, which is pretty rad, too. I actually do love those as prize support. I wasn't sold on them right away, but they're pretty awesome.
Oh, they're awesome.
So that's pretty decent faction representation. We're not seeing too much, other than the First Order, we're not seeing too much skew in one particular direction. Pretty well spread out.
I mean, I think there was more Scum than I expected to make it to the top 32. You know, I thought Scum had a decent chance at winning the event, but I didn't expect that much of the cut to be Scum.
I mean, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I think we were definitely not expecting Scum to be on our radar. You know, even when we were doing our power ranking so many months ago, we had Scum rated pretty low on the list. And then to see, you know, 2 Scum lists make it into the top 4 and just miss out on that final table, that's pretty impressive.
I was expecting to see more Scum than Rebels for sure, but I don't think I was expecting to see more than Resistance or as many as the Republic or the Empire.
Right.
I maybe thought Scum would be sitting more around maybe like 5, but to see them represented so well in the top cut is pretty good. It's cool.
Yeah, I feel like Republic and Empire were just kind of givens just because they have so many strong tools in the extended format. Scum has a lot of tools, but none of them had been doing amazingly well. But we did see, you know, a lot of what did well were those, you know, control effects combined with the efficiency of Cartel Marauders. Which made some really awesome control lists that could help take down those high initiative ace lists.
Right. That Torkoal Mux control was definitely all over the place and, you know, did well making it through the cut. I think the big surprise from Scum was the Fenrau and Boba Fett lists doing exceptionally well. You know, 3 of those lists making it into the top 32.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not terribly complex list builds. You know, it's usually Fenrau with either Fearless or Crackshot, depending on how much of a bid they were going for. And then a fairly well-loaded out Boba Fett, who does have some good counterplay. You know, having the Slave One title there gives you some options to, after you activate, you can change which direction you're going, which really helps you against all those lists that are running a lot of 3 and 4 initiative pilots. The other one that surprised me, too, was just seeing Quad Star Vipers make it all the way to top 4. This is really interesting, you know, pretty straight up build, not too complex.
Yeah, it's just 4 of the Black Sun Assassins with Crackshot. So pretty bare bones, but I think what really gives this list an edge is the Star Viper's funny barrel roll. It's just so hard to pin down where those ships are going to be each turn, you know, kind of provided that they're not necessarily stressed, but they have so many options for where they're going to be and where they're going to finish, which just gives them a big edge against a lot of the other archetypes that we see represented here.
Well, and I think it's having the cool barrel roll, but also just having repositions linked to focus, which gives you opportunities where you can do some really cool blocks and then still get modification on your attacks. And I think, you know, sitting all at initiative 3 is a pretty good place to be because, you know, a lot of the efficiency list did run stuff at 3 or lower. So, you know, if you're going up against, you know, a separatist swarm that has a lot of, you know, 1 or 2 pilots, to be 3s just basically makes all 4 of your ships aces.
And while I would certainly wouldn't say a Star Viper is beefy, I mean, they have 4 hull backed up by a shield. So, I mean, it'll take a couple shots to kill one. So they're going to be around for a while to persist.
A faction we did expect to see really good representation from, though, was the Republic, and we were not disappointed. 7 lists total, 4 of which were kind of the regen aces we've been seeing with some variation. For the most part, they had Obi-Wan Kenobi and Rico Lee, and then some other variation of a different pilot. Maybe you had Anakin in there, maybe you had Mace Windu or Plo Koon. Lots of different variations, but they all essentially do the same thing. Have really strong chassis combined with those regen R2 astromechs. Make them really intimidating, and if you're a lower initiative, you're going to have a really hard time with these.
Yeah, I think maybe the surprise with the Republic regenerating aces was the inclusion of a few little Annies in the N1 Starfighter. You know, we saw Marcel Manzano make top 32 with that. He also went undefeated on day 1A. Earning him the top Republic player of his day. You know, Anakin has been a staple of the Republic faction, but not necessarily Anakin in the N1, you know, that initiative 4 with just 1 force. You know, hard to compare to the 3 force initiative 6 in, you know, the Delta 7 or the Y-Wing.
I will say, though, I did have to play against, it wasn't Marcel's list, but an Anakin, a little Annie with advanced proton torpedoes. And that is not something you should discount. That force mod and being able to line up those torpedoes is pretty devastating for most any ship.
Sure is. Knocked me out.
We did see 1 sinker swarm from the Republic make it in. These are lists that typically run 4 V-19 Torrents, a sinker in an arc, given the rerolls out in the side arcs at range 1 to 2. And then typically they have Rico Lee with regen, which this list was pretty much the stock sinker swarm you'd expect to see. That's not to say it's not a good list. It is a very strong list. I played against it in my 6th round of day 1A, and it we had a really good game, but it was not a great matchup for me, and he ended up crushing me.
There was also 2 mid-range Republic lists making into the top 32, you know, mix of, you know, some Jedi, maybe CLT or 7B, and then ARC 170s and Torrents. You know, a little bit of the beef with, you know, still a few of the good Republic aces as well.
Yeah, shout out to Sarah Tessa making top 32 there with that list. She's a Minnesota player, had a really good performance there, and yeah, we're super proud of our Minnesota representation in that top cut, day 2.
It was cool within those mid-range lists for Republic to see some representation from the new Y-Wings that just came out a couple weeks ago. Both of the mid-range lists had a broadside in them, and then one of them had a matchstick as well. So good to see some new stuff on the table, especially at Worlds.
Yeah, that matchstick can get nasty too, because you can just take friendly target locks on it and trigger the matchstick rerolls for each red token it has on it. That's a pretty good setup, and it's not that hard to do. Going down to the Empire side, though, we did see lots of aces representation. 5 of the 7 Empire lists in the top 32 were some variant on Imperial aces. Some of them were triple ace lists. Some of them used a shuttle to give supports and coordinates, usually Colonel Jenden, to pass out those free target locks. But we saw Lieutenant Tsai in there, too.
Right, and then we had a few more mid-range Empire lists. I think there was 2, you know, using some of the more lower initiative Imperial ships like the Inquisitors or perhaps a Red Line.
I had to play Duncan Howard when he was flying Sunderfell and redlining Colonel Jenden, and man, that is pretty gross. Colonel Jenden moves first, passes out a coordinate action to redline, takes a focus, gets the free target lock from redline's ability, and then can 4K behind you and shoot you with full mods. That's not a great feeling when that happens, and I experienced it a couple times. I mean, overall, really good representation from the Empire, though. Obviously, an Imperial list won the whole event there, so, you know, that's a really strong faction right now. I'll be interested to see if we see some point adjustments in the future here in just a couple months when we get the next adjustment.
Yeah, and so I think just a cool moment as we move on to the next category here, our Separatists. You know, we had Paul Olson on a few episodes ago talking about the Separatist swarms and all the options they had. You know, brought him on as the local Separatist expert. It turns out he's not just a local expert. He's the top Separatist player in the world right now.
Yeah, we saw of the four lists from the Separatists, not surprisingly, all of those were Seer Swarms. And three of them made top 32, but Paul made it all the way down to top 8. So huge congratulations to Paul for that. We should have him on the show here soon. Because I think it would be really cool to catch up with him and talk about that, kind of what he was thinking before Worlds and how things changed since then. And I'm sure he'd be on board with that, especially how we've teased him so much. He can just kind of rub it in our faces.
Yeah, you know, he posted a kind of blog post on the Twin Cities Facebook page, you know, about his whole Worlds experience. So if you're curious, be sure to give that a read.
Yeah, we don't do bat reps here, but Paul is more than happy to tell you all about his victory.
He definitely also had the most diverse of the four swarms that made it to. He had no struts on his drones, no Discord missiles, and was the only swarm of the four to have Kraken instead of TA-175, which I think is super interesting.
Well, but I think his best call, though, was all the other ones mostly ran Trade Federation drones. He opted for Separatist drones at Initiative 3. Which I know was a kind of a later change he made to the list, but I think it was the right call. There was enough lists out there at the lower initiatives, especially, you know, other sinker swarms out there, where having that higher initiative could make the entire difference for your game.
Oh, totally agree. Yeah, that was absolutely the right call by Paul there. Initiative 3 was just a huge place to be for this meta. I also just am happy we didn't see any Nantexes make it through the top 32. You know, I thought the Seer Swarms were the better lists, and it's good to be proven right there.
Yeah, and a lot of people have voiced concerns about whether or not that's good for the game, and that, I think, still remains to be seen. You know, do we want these tractor effects in the game in the way Sunfac brings them? But to see that, you know, still the preferable choice was just kind of a more classic swarm, I think that's pretty interesting, because we did not see any Sunfac representation in the top 32. On the Resistance side, though, for the three lists they did have, they were all in that mid-range category and, you know, used a combination either of RZ-2 A-Wings, some transport pods, or maybe a couple of those more generic T-70s or just Pava. A lot of what the Resistance does very well, we saw well represented here in the top 32 cut. Two of those Resistance lists making it all the way down to top 8, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, just as far as, you know, where the Resistance are at with their points, I think mid-range is kind of the main way to play them. You know, their aces just don't quite compare to the aces in other factions when you just go all in on aces. So, you know, you can still have a few aces, but I think, you know, you want some of the more efficient mid-range ships. You know, be it, you know, some of the lower initiative A-Wings or the transport pods, you know, not just Finn. We saw a lot of them do well. You know, we had a V Marani in there as well.
Yeah, we saw a Rose Tycho in there too, which is a ship you were running as well, Carson. So interesting to see that your choice was somewhat validated, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it was right for me to fly Rose over Finn.
I still stand by what I say, though, and I think Heroic's not a good card, and you should not run it.
All right.
But, you know, that's just me. I guess I didn't make the top cut here.
Maybe a lot of other people agreed with you, because I did not hear a lot of people yelling Heroic, at least on my day, anyway.
No, I heard it's the Resistance being yelled a lot more by Kaelin Wong.
Yes, that was pretty funny. I did have one opponent who got to use Heroic on me an obscene number of times, some of which were successful, so I guess I have to give credit where credit's due, right?
Right.
Lastly, for faction representation here, we did have the Rebels, who, you know, brought Wedge Antilles, still a beast, able to deal with those high agility ships thanks to his pilot ability. And, oh man, U-Wings, those are tough matchups. Those are hard games to play. Especially those four U-Wing builds. I don't think any of the top cut here was four U-Wings, but they all had at least Cassian Andor, right? If they had a U-Wing.
Yeah, there was a decent amount of U-Wings there.
Oh, we did have a four. Yep, four U-Wings. Sorry. Top 32. I totally overlooked this one because I thought, yeah, Blue Squadron Scout. It's pretty rough. Oh, man, with Leia Organa, still good. Being able to do the stop, white, rotate, still take an action, and then be able to follow it up with a red stop, rotate the next turn. That's pretty hard to play around. I just, every time I've had that matchup now, I just have to, like, hope I guess the right direction to go and that they don't just destroy me at range one. So U-Wing, still a powerful option here. I actually would expect to see a point change to those at the next point update. Just because I don't think four U-Wings is something that we want in the game. But kudos to those who did well with it.
It's fine.
And then for First Order representation, obviously there was nothing there.
Rip.
I still believe in the First Order. Correct. Yeah, rip. I accept that Kylo is a lesser Soontir-fell, but I still like Kylo a whole lot. And I think my biggest hope is, you know, since they didn't do that well at Worlds, maybe they won't get point increases in the next update. Maybe we'll get some point decreases. And maybe I'll be actually able to fit Fanatical in my list, even though I don't think I need upgrades. I can do just fine without him.
But I do think that Lieutenant Tavison is the best ace for Aces High. So they do have that going for them.
I will say, though, that Wolf with Veteran Tail Gunner and Perceptive Copilot felt pretty fun every time I got a double tap off out the front and out the back. Seems good. All right, do you guys want to share any final thoughts before we close out this episode about World Championships or the state of X-Wing?
No, just, you know, shout out to everyone who was there. It was an awesome week. Got to play a lot of great X-Wing games. Got to just see a lot of great people. Shout out to everyone who said hi to me and not Tim.
That did happen once again, and I was pretty upset by it, but I won't name names, so it's fine. If they won't name names, I won't name them either. John, did you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, just had a great time. It was good seeing people and talking to people that I've met, even just over the course of the past year. Seeing some of the crew come out from Denver, had a lot of fun meeting them when we went out for the system open back in April. It was good to see them back here in our own state for Worlds here in October. Just looking forward to, you know, hanging out with those people more in the future at events and looking forward to the opportunities we have at Worlds next year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really exciting week. Like we said, it was my favorite Worlds, easily a fantastic event overall. Looking forward now to more X-Wing, even though I'll take maybe a week or two off of actually playing X-Wing games. Looking forward to the Las Vegas Open coming up in January, where all three of us will actually be going. So that'll be a fun event there. And we'll get to see how the game changes, hopefully a point update sometime before that. We definitely want to give some shout-outs, though, to the people who made Worlds happen. First of all, just all the players who came out and everyone who, you know, came up to say hi to me or Carson. Both are acceptable. I did get a decent amount of playing at a table, and someone adjacent would say, oh, I thought I recognized that voice, which is always a fun moment when you've been doing a podcast for 3 years and just, you know, people start to recognize what you sound like with your whiny tenor. Looking at you, Carson.
Uh-huh.
We do want to shout out the people who made the event run, all of the FFG staff, the names that pop up in particular for me, Matt Holland being a great community asset there. He was live streaming all weekend, but beforehand, you know, in the months prior, he's been doing a really good job of getting information out to the players and answering questions and just being actively involved in the community. We really appreciate that level of involvement in the game community. Really helps make the game all that much better.
Shout out to Wade Pache. The Worlds prizes this year were unreal. Just really cool. A lot of different prize options. You know, the alternate cardboard punch was really cool.
Brilliant.
You know, I'm going to be flying basically either Plo or some T-65s for a little while now because just having those cool, unique cardboard dials and cardboard bases is awesome.
And then also a big shout out to Jimmy Lee, also from FFG. Did a great job keeping everything running smoothly this week at Worlds and had a big hand in some of the side events that were running while the qualifying days were going on. So good work to him, and hopefully we get some more good stuff next year.
We did also want to specifically shout out the judges for the X-Wing event. There were a decently large team here. I think 10 judges overall over the week. And as far as I know, they did a fantastic job. I had no complaints about the judging at this event.
Yeah, I mean, all these people decided to come out here for Worlds and not play X-Wing, instead help us have a more enjoyable X-Wing experience. So big sacrifice on their part and hugely appreciated.
Huge shout out to Brent Wong, Michael Juris, Nick Perry,
the Zach Matthews Carolina Crates podcast, Jeff Paul Miller, Joshua Kuntz, Logan Haas.
And we have Isaac Swan, Michael Bird, and last but certainly not least, Vic Top 9, Big Vic Yang.
Thanks, Big Vic.
Our local hero.
Oh, we should have read his name off 9th.
Missed opportunity.
We also missed opportunity. Huge shout out to Dion Morales and the whole Gold Squadron podcast team. He assembled some amazing live stream coverage of the event, switching between games actively. I mean, he's always impressed me by his level of dedication to supporting the community and live streaming games. And he just, you know, took it up to a whole new level there, to the point where I don't think our live streams will ever be able to compete. You know, we try our best, but his coverage was amazing. And he had a team from people all across the country, different podcasts all come together to, you know, really showcase this event for people who couldn't make it.
Oh, no, it was fantastic. Really. I mean, not surprised, but he blew FFG stream just out of the water. Just, it was so good. I'm really excited to go back and watch a bunch of the games on there. You know, the commentators were fantastic. And just, you know, the three games at once cutting back and forth with just amazing production value. Dion was walking around with little side cameras. It was really cool.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see. I was live streamed for my match against the Sinker Swarm, and it was a really great game. Even though I lost, I really enjoyed that game. So hopefully that video will be up soon, so I can share it and actually hear Kevin Lines say I played a game well, because that's never happened before.
And then lastly, just a huge shout out to the other numerous staff members that were helping out with the Worlds event this past weekend, just with tournament support, registration, the side events, and even just the prize wall support. I only worked one day, and at the end of it, I was exhausted. So a lot of those people were there for the whole weekend, you know, 5 days, and then put in a ton of time and effort beforehand, making sure everything was ready to go by the time the event actually started. So thank you all for the work that you did. It made everything go a lot smoother.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to this episode of Radio TCX Podcast. If you like the show, you can go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
If you like the show, consider going on to iTunes and leaving the podcast a 5-star review, saying what you liked and why you think other people should listen.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter of the show today.
Again, folks, thank you so much for listening. If you were at Worlds, hopefully you had a great time. Otherwise, hopefully you had a great time watching it on the live stream. We will talk to you next week. Finally, the upgrade card that would appear at the final. What's the jingling in the background? We're getting a lot of.
Here, I'll stop it. It's the bird. Give me a second.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's not my cat running around.
I just didn't know if it was, like, depending on who was talking.
The jingling is the bird. If there's some loud bangs, it's the cat.
Gotcha. All right, we good?
Yeah. What was the final
one? That should help. That was, right. I'm getting excited. My bad.
He just loves X-Wing so much.
He does. He's really passionate about the podcast.